braving the heat and for missing the France-Wales game. There's always SuperSport highlights. So, but I've really been praying this week that God would just invite each person who needs to be here today. And so I really believe that if you're here, whether you realize it or not, it's because God has invited you to be here today. And I'm trusting that his words for you today will be a cool glass of water for your soul. So you might not know this, but the 1st of October was International Day of Older Persons. It was instituted by the United Nations in 1990. And we're already a few weeks into October. Stevie, help me. Are we fine? Okay. We're already a few weeks into October, but I just thought as a church community, let's not miss the opportunity to acknowledge older people, people who've been on the planet for a particularly long stretch of time. So maybe before you go home today, you need to just find someone who's older than you and say, I want to honor you because you are an older person and well done for surviving this long, okay? But I think it's important sometimes to talk about age, just to hold ourselves accountable. Because as Jesus followers, if we believe that we're made for more, and we do, then how do we make sure that as time passes and as the things we do and the way we live make the world different from how it was, how do we make sure that those changes aren't just trivial, but that they actually build the kingdom and glorify God and alter eternity? C.T. Studd, he was a British cricketer and missionary to China. He said, only one life, 'twill soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last.
Beautiful.
I'll say that again. Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. The reality is that though God is eternal, though he is inside of time and outside of time at the same time, he stretches backwards into eternity past and forwards into eternity future. The reality is that for perfect reasons, creation as we know it, us included, we're bound by time and space. We live out our earthly existence on a two-dimensional timeline. And it doesn't take long for even little children to recognize that I have a past. I used to be like this. I used to do that. This is where I find myself now, and there's something up ahead. I remember when our boys were little, they were like 5 or 6. They'd be like, you know, when I was little, like when I was like 3, you know. But we travel from birth to death along a predetermined timeline. The psalmist tells us in Psalm 139 that the number of our days is already recorded. It's preset. And we don't know if we have a day left or a decade or much longer. I've seen a birthday card that says, forget about the past, you can't change it. Forget about the future, you can't predict it. Forget about the present, I didn't get you one. But if we believe that we're made for more than just trudging along through all those predetermined days until they're finished and we die, then surely we want to learn to steward our time well, our past, our present, our future. And that's what we're going to look at today. And I want to center our thoughts on something that Moses wrote. The timeline of Moses' life is fascinating. He was 120 years old when he died. And his life is divided into 3 distinct chunks of 40 years each. So he spends 40 years in Egypt, initially with his God-fearing parents, and then later as a son in the Egyptian palace. And then he witnesses one of his own people, a Hebrew, being beaten by an Egyptian taskmaster. He gets mad, he kills the Egyptian, and then he's like, all right, that was dumb. And so he runs away, and he spends the next 40 years in Midian, working as a shepherd for Jethro. He marries Jethro's daughter, Zipporah. They have 2 boys. But I reckon this season of 40 years was the season of waiting that Stephen preached about a few weeks ago. This is where God teaches Moses patience and trust, okay? You can imagine, what are you doing today, Moses? Oh, yeah, I'm just looking after these sheep again. You know, I'm an ex-prince, FYI, but yeah, just me and the sheep for 40 years. This is where God teaches Moses things about himself, weeds things out of his character, so much so that Numbers 12 and verse 3 talks about Moses like this. Now Moses was very humble, more humble than any other person on earth. This is where God teaches Moses to worship, where he equips him to wage war against the enemies of Israel. And when Moses is 80 years old, God says, okay, you're ready now to look after some different sheep. go back to Egypt and get them. And you know the story. Moses is like, let my people go. Pharaoh says, forget it. Moses says, okay, so I'm going to ask you again. I'm going to give you another opportunity to answer. I want you to think carefully about how you're going to respond. Plagues and chaos until eventually Pharaoh's like, even me, I really want you to go. And God splits the Red Sea and the Israelites enter the wilderness where Moses leads them for another 40 years. Interestingly, and so different from how we picture the timelines of our lives, so different from our worldview, Moses doesn't retire to Plet when he's old and he's achieved a bunch of things and his old mutual pension has paid out. His biggest, his most difficult, his most important assignment from God comes right at the end of his life. So I'm not saying you can't retire to Plet, of course. I'm just saying that even if we've grown to be very old, God may yet have crucial kingdom plans for us in Plet or elsewhere. And there isn't really a happy ending for Moses. He gets to the end of his life and he doesn't even get to enter the promised land with his people, which is an incredible reminder to us that the tiny timelines of our lives are part of a much longer timeline, a much bigger story, and we are never the main character. But Moses wrote a psalm. It's actually the oldest psalm in the Bible. David and the sons of Korah and others, they came much later. Moses wrote Psalm 90. And this is the same Moses who understood something about time passing. He understood something about seasons, about our past, our present, our future. And he starts off his psalm like this. Psalm 90 and verse 1 and 2. He says, Lord, through all the generations, you have been our home. Before the mountains were born, before you gave birth to the earth and the world, from beginning to end, you are God. From beginning to end, you are God. It's a psalm about God's eternal nature and our fragility. It's about our sin and his holiness. Moses prays for God's favor to rest on his people. He asks God to establish the work of their hands because without God, their work amounts to nothing. We're going to focus really on just one verse this morning, but if you don't know what to do with your quiet times this week, maybe dive into Psalm 90. In the middle of this beautiful psalm, Psalm 90 and verse 12, Moses prays this, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. The New Living Translation says, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. This is such a significant prayer to pray because we are made for more than getting stuck in our pasts. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. The old is gone. We're new creations. And we're made for more than losing ourselves in relentless discontent in our present circumstances, unable to lift our heads. And we're made for more than being crippled by fear of the future or rendered useless today because we're idolizing something that we hope will happen tomorrow. I love grammar jokes, so just bear with me. You've probably heard this, but the past, the present, and the future walked into a bar. It was tense. You're welcome. But we need to realize the brevity of life because every day we live with the tension of a past, a present, and a future. And we need wisdom to carry that tension well. At the end of last year, I asked God to give me a word for the year, for 2019, because it's a thing that cool Christians seem to do. And I wanted to be cool and have like a word for the year to just inform my goals and decisions, to filter my opportunities. I was like, I need a word for the year. As it turned out, God gave me three words. Wow. And because I'm very cool. and he showed me quite clearly on an airplane that these three words had to do with my past, my present, and my future. And here they are. Grateful, content, ready. So I've been living with these words for the past 10 months and just trying them out in different situations as they relate to the past, present, and future. And I think they've helped me to realize the brevity of life. Our family had this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity last year to spend Christmas with friends in Canada. And we flew back to South Africa on the 31st of December, 2018. We only actually landed at Orotamba on the 2nd of January, 2019 because of time zones and Canada's really far away. Plus, we got to spend 11 hours in Heathrow's Terminal 5, living the dream. So we were waiting at Toronto's Pearson International Airport on New Year's Eve. And we knew that it was already January 1st back home in South Africa. So we boarded the plane at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dinner was served just after midnight, okay? But quietly and politely, it was just the usual chicken or beef, you know, rubber or leather. The captain didn't suggest that we leap from our seats and chest bump the people across the aisle. Nobody sang Auld Lang Syne, thankfully, because nobody knows the words to that thing. But nobody said Happy New Year because we weren't in Eastern Time anymore. We were that much closer to Greenwich, where midnight had also already ticked by hours before. So we felt like we were in some kind of time warp. We had missed the midnight countdown because we were in this weird, neither here nor there space between time zones, continents, and actual calendar years in this case. But on that flight somewhere over the Atlantic, God showed me quite clearly that our earth lives are always, in a sense, lived in an in-between space. God calls us to live in two places at once, the chaos of life and the quiet of his presence. Brilliant. There's constantly a tenuous tie between temporal and eternal. We never know where we are, really, on the timeline of fragile existence. We don't know how much time we've got left or where our times will lead us. But God does. He knows exactly where we're positioned in time, even if we don't. He's inside of time and outside of time at the same time. He holds time, and he holds every detail of our lives. In Psalm 90 and verse 4, Moses says to God, "For you, 1,000 years are as a passing day, as brief as a few night hours." So perhaps if you find yourself caught somewhere between what was and what has been and what will be, and you know that you need wisdom, as I know I do, then maybe these three words, as they relate to the past, present, and future, will just help you as we consider the brevity of life. So let's look at the first one. Be grateful for the past. Be grateful for the past. This has been said before, and it's worth saying again. If God never does another good thing for you for as long as you live, it's actually okay. At the cross, he already did enough good to last you a lifetime. He did enough to last you all eternity. Be grateful for what Jesus already did for you in the past. It cannot be undone by any person or circumstance. It is finished. Beautiful. Incredibly, for the vast majority of us, the blessings didn't stop at the cross. If we look back over the numbered days that we've already lived, there are tons of other life experiences for which we can be grateful. Could you maybe settle your past in a place of peace by just voicing your thanks to God? I mean, think of the thousands of times that you have laughed. Man, what a gift. If you just imagine for a moment all the ice cream you've ever eaten was suddenly piled up in an enormous bowl in front of you. I mean, depending on your age, you've probably eaten mountains of ice cream over the decades of your life. Give thanks for the places you've been, for the way you've seen God's majesty in creation, for people who showed up at seminal times in your past and offered advice that steered your course. Maybe you were in an accident, could have been far worse, but God spared you, and you're here today. Be grateful that you've survived your past. And if your past has been unspeakably traumatic, perhaps the challenge is to wrestle with God in prayer until you can get to a place where you can accept the truth that even the trauma God will somehow cause for your good. Give thanks that by God's grace you can put the past where it belongs, which is behind you. Back to Psalm 90 and verse 15, Moses prays, "Give us gladness in proportion to our former misery. Replace the evil years with good." Amazing. And in Joel 2 verse 25, God promises this, "I will restore to you the years that the swarming locust has eaten." So perhaps if your hope has been eaten away by something that happened in your past, if you feel trapped by a memory, an event, an attack, the words of someone who said you don't have what it takes, and maybe you feel like you need a miracle to set you free, then maybe for you, thanksgiving, thanking God that despite what happened in your past, he never once relaxed his grace grip on your life, that thanksgiving will be the first step of scary faith in the direction of trusting that God can restore the years that the locust has eaten. He can give you gladness in proportion to your former misery. Jesus takes regret. He turns it to redemption. Sometimes thanksgiving, as difficult as it is, actually precedes that miracle. Andy Crouch suggests that the stories we tell about anything that's happened to us 5 minutes ago or 5 years ago, those stories mostly, and this is a generalization, but the stories we tell mostly fall into two big categories: hero stories and victim stories. And this has been so convicting to me as I listen to the narrative that I spin of my own life. Yesterday, I had three conversations, and afterwards, I was like, I was a victim. Every time, I made myself out to be the victim. But we tend to tell our stories leaning either towards arrogance or self-pity. Or we tell stories that are a combination of both. So we're the victim who overcomes and ends up the hero. So you'll hear things like, the traffic was so bad this morning. I got caught behind a bus and then two taxis pulled in front of me and the robots were out because of load shedding again. And like, how am I supposed to get to my exam on time and the universe is clearly against me? Victim story. But you should have seen, I dominated. Drove on the pavements, past that bus and the taxis. Got to my exam, slid into my seat as the papers were being handed out. Hero story. But we're made for more. We're made for more than recounting our pasts with arrogance or with self-pity. And maybe we'd be wise as we tell the stories of our lives and in that way number our days, we'd be wise to tell stories of rescue and redemption. Stories that promote God and others. Grateful stories. Secondly, as we realize the brevity of life, let's be content in the present. Be content in the present. David says in Psalm 27 and verse 13, I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So the great news is that though God has already done for us in the past way more than we deserve, it's probably not going to be all misery for the rest of our lives. God will probably continue to do plenty of good things in you, through you, for you, in the current circumstances of your life. Even if you didn't buy a cappuccino when you came in this morning, if you even just walk past the baristas at the back and smelt the coffee, that is the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Our life is full of small goodnesses that we seldom even take notice of. When I hear the gates open at night and I'm like, yes, Murray's home, thank you, Jesus, it's the best sound in my day. It's the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Second best sound in my day is the sound of our printer. So my laptop and our printer don't have a very good relationship. They just struggle, and sometimes they won't speak to each other for days. And I mean, we've tried interventions, and it's really difficult between them. And so when I push, control P, and then I wait, I'm like, come on, guys, I know you're better than this. You can get along. And then I hear the printer, like, kick into life and grab that paper. It's the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. If your teenager hugs you in the school car park, that is the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Anytime you find yourself riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, it's the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Paul also reminds us in 1 Timothy 6 verse 8. He says, so if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. You're all wearing something, thankfully. And I'm guessing that many of you had to decide which clothes to put on today. And if you didn't eat breakfast, it was probably your choice because you're trendy and you're doing intermittent fasting. But most of us have too many clothes, too much food, and Wi-Fi, and Netflix accounts, and cars, and phones, and hair products. And if something breaks, we've got a spare one. Man, guys, it is so unfair. It is so unfair how much we have. We dare not be discontent. We got to be part of the recent trip to Mozambique, which was so wonderful. But driving across the border through the outskirts of Maputo and then Shashai and Inhambane, it was quite difficult to take in our surroundings because Clint was leading the convoy, so it was just chasing the quantum. No, I'm kidding, Clint. But driving through those towns and villages and cities, Murray and I happened to notice a number of people with club feet. We saw one guy, he'd got huge chunks of sponge that he'd masking taped to the bottom of his feet, and he was walking on those chunks of sponge to try and alleviate the pain. And I think what broke our hearts about seeing these people is that it's such a solvable problem, right? If a baby's born with club feet, the condition can immediately be treated with various manual interventions or with surgery. So if you're born with club feet, there is no reason why in the 21st century you should be going through life with club feet. Many of you will remember Armindo. He's been here to 3CI a couple times. He's the pastor of the church that we partner with in Mashish. And if you've met Armindo, you'll know that he is club-footed as well. He wears specialized shoes that I think Clint or Damien or someone organized for him. He lives with tremendous pain. And yet you will struggle to find a more contented individual. And of course, contentment isn't passive and resigned. That's complacency, right? Contentment comes with a kind of delight, a kind of leaning forward energy. Psalm 34 and verse 5 says, "Those who look to him for help will be radiant with joy." Armindo is radiant with joy. So even though he walks with a physical limp, he stands upright in the spirit because he's learned the secret of being content. It's like he makes a daily choice to say with the psalmist in Psalm 118 and verse 24, "This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." Brilliant. And back to Psalm 90, Moses prays in verse 14, "Satisfy us, make us content each morning with your unfailing love so we may sing for joy to the end of our lives." Most of us have access to excellent health care. Most of us stand more or less upright physically. But I've realized I sometimes walk with a spiritual limp because I'm discontent. Contentment means that in the present, now, while you have life and strength, you're not scared to get your hands dirty for kingdom causes bigger than you. It means you haven't lost your sense of wonder, right? You're willing to dig deep into the life soil of kids' community. Moses prays in Psalm 90 and verse 16, "Let us, your servants, see you work again. Let our children see your glory." Contentment means that in the present, now, because you've no idea how much time you've got left, you're living at peace with all people as far as it depends on you. You're asking forgiveness often, quickly. And again, if it feels impossible for you to be content today because of overwhelming fear or loneliness, or because someone has cheated on you or threatened to leave you, or because you're being liquidated, or because you're battling an eating disorder or an addiction, and maybe you're sitting here going, "I can't even deal. I want to run away and hide." As you number your days by taking stock of where you find yourself in your present circumstances, I want to say to you that it's okay to hide away. You can hide until you're convinced it's safe to come out again. The psalmist tells us exactly where to take cover. Psalm 32 and verse 7, "For you are my hiding place. You protect me from trouble. You surround me with songs of victory." So keep hiding away in him until such time as you can say again with David, "I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." Brilliant. So be grateful for the past. Find contentment in the present. And then thirdly, be ready for the future. Be ready for the future. In terms of learning to number my days, I probably struggle more with the future than I do with the past or the present. I'm like the poster child for type A personalities, which means that I love to know what's going to happen. But God, who is full of surprises, breaks me and remakes me just a little bit every day, and I think I'm slowly improving. But the truth is that God's already done us good in the past, and we can find contentment in the present. So anything else that he adds to our lives, like knowing the next step for your family, your career, your relationship, your studies, your startup venture, anything he adds is a total bonus, right? We don't actually necessarily need to know what the next step is. We just need to be ready to take it. Because Jesus is a good shepherd. He leads us into pastures and promised lands. And sometimes he asks us just to lie down in the green grass beneath our feet. And maybe today you need to take a breath and just remember that there's no future point at which God's love for you ends. There's no point in the future where his power to accomplish his plans for you, which are the best plans for you, suddenly runs out. I love what Job says in chapter 42 and verse 2. "I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. In the meantime, 1 Peter 3:15 says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Be ready. If we learn to live fearlessly and fully where we are now, we'll be ready to live fearlessly and fully wherever God leads us in the future. When God tells Moses to go back to Egypt to fetch the Israelites, Moses is really insecure and he doesn't feel that he has a whole lot to offer in terms of the future of his nation. And of course, God says to him in Exodus 4, what is that in your hand? And it's his shepherd's staff. And of course, God uses that staff to perform the signs and wonders that will convince Pharaoh to let the people go. So if today you're going, I'm really not ready for the future, what's in your hand? Could you possibly just make ready to offer it to God for his future use? I want to come back to this idea of being caught somewhere between what was and what will be. As a church, our building project has, in a sense, put us in an in-between space. Physically, certainly, we're in a space between what was and what will be. Let's be grateful for the past. Let's be grateful for the 300. Let's be grateful for everything that God has done in and through this community. Let's not yearn for the good old days, the way the Israelites hankered for the food they ate in Egypt, right? Let's just be so grateful that God has seen fit to weave us into the ongoing story of this place. Let's be content in the present, in this exciting temporary space. When we moan about the creaking floors and the heat and how far we have to walk to fetch our kids at Super City, sure, guys, first world problems. Let's be content. And let's be ready for whatever the future will look like. Let's say, God, I'm ready. I don't know what your plans are, but I'm ready for you to send me. Send me to scrub the toilets in those containers. Send me to Lisbon, where there will also be toilets to scrub. We don't know what God will do with the 3,000. He might grow us bigger. He might shrink us back down to 300 because 2,700 have been sent from this place. I'm not prophesying. I'm saying we just don't know. But we can be ready. We can number our days by cramming each one full of life. And we can gain a heart of wisdom and we can be ready. Let's make this more personal because maybe you're here today and you're waiting for some sort of magical midnight countdown in your own life and you're starting to wonder if you've missed it. Are you stuck somewhere in your past? Even now, is God bringing to mind something that you know is holding you back? What might be the first step towards gratefully coming to terms with what has been? Are you stuck in a rut of discontent in your present circumstances because somehow you've lost sight of the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living? Are you hung up on what may be, awfulizing and catastrophizing the future? Could you trust all that to God and could you maybe just ready yourself to obey? Jesus was also once bound by time and space. His earthly life, like ours, was a collection of yesterdays, todays, and tomorrows. And yet even constrained to a timeline, Jesus was the epitome of abundant life, and it was abundant life that he came to bring. He's the same God who numbers your days and gives you a heart of wisdom. And he didn't just make you, he made you for more. Thank you.